Sweet or nah? Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Rier on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined by Travis Rier on the Rier on YouTube channel. Lots to get into in this midweek edition of Talking Tide, previewing Alabama's big home game against the Oklahoma Sooners. Travis, the Crimson Tide comes in 6-0 on the season in SEC play, and they can't I've run the scenarios. They cannot clinch a spot in the SEC championship game with a win over OU. However, if they do knock off the Sooners, most of the remaining scenarios, and when I say most, I'm talking 75% plus, have Alabama in there, whether they win or lose to Auburn.
Which, if it plays out that way, and I don't want to get this show off on the wrong foot. However, if it plays out that way and they lose to Auburn on the road and then go to the SEC championship game, could they be in a win to get in situation to the college football playoff? I mean, there's part of me that says, in terms of the big picture, the college football playoff, if someone said, look, Alabama's only going to win one of these two, Auburn or Oklahoma,
right?
Would they be better off beating Oklahoma or beating Auburn in that scenario?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'll say this. If they were to beat Oklahoma, lose to Auburn, lose in an SEC championship game, and get left out, that would be the first and biggest, boldest, ugliest example of the selection committee penalizing a championship game qualifier, right? Which I think they're loath to do. But, you know, and playing into that, of course, is we're starting big picture, aren't we? That's fine. We'll start big picture. Keep in mind that the selection committee in the off season, Travis, and I'm hesitant to believe this until I see it with my own eyes, but off season, they said, we're going to start taking strength of schedule in greater consideration, right? So that plays into it too.
Well, and I mean, if Alabama beats Oklahoma on Saturday and Georgia wins out, Vandy wins out to go 10-2,
right?
Head to head, in a scenario like we're talking about at the end of the regular season, quality of wins would seem to really benefit Alabama, and also in terms of strength of schedule. So, conversation for a later date.
Yeah.
Just planting a seed.
We start with the tees here on Talking Tide.
We did not bury the lead.
No, we didn't.
Well, we kind of did, because the damn game this week's Oklahoma. We haven't talked about it yet. So.
Sooners coming in, Travis. It's going to be 2:30 p.m. Central Time kickoff. Oklahoma comes in 7-2 on the year, still in the college football playoff picture. Certainly, is Oklahoma. A win over Alabama would be huge for the CFP chances for the Sooners, no doubt about it. Definitely, though, on the outside looking in, where the SEC game is concerned. We're sitting here right now in mid-November, still with five SEC teams sitting on one or fewer SEC losses.
Yeah,
and given that, you know, you there may be some wild scenarios where a two-loss team, you know, sneaks in there, but right now, you better have none or one if you want to stay in that SEC championship game hunt.
Yeah, for that, for sure. Of course, Alabama's only loss this season, non-con. So conference losses, they're in a good spot. Texas is kind of that way, has two losses, but just one in the league, because had the loss to Ohio State to open the season. But, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting matchup. And, you know, Oklahoma essentially began its playoff a couple weeks ago in Knoxville. I mean, that was essentially a playoff game, because with those two teams, a loser was going to be very much behind the eight ball where the college football playoff was concerned. So Oklahoma wins that game, gets a bye week, and now moves on to what for OU anyway is the equivalent of another playoff game. If they win this game on Saturday, then a game like Missouri will become a sort of playoff game for OU. And I'm sure that's the way Alabama's approaching it too. It feels like Alabama has approached every game since Florida State like it was a playoff. And that seems to have done wonders for them as far as maintaining the engagement required to go on this run they've been on.
No question about it. And also interesting too, just from a from the standpoint of dynamics from last year to this year, Oklahoma last year, 2024, knocked Alabama out of the playoff hunt with that third loss. Alabama shoes on the other foot now, right? Because Alabama can hand Oklahoma their third loss, which would, I think, pretty much knock them out of the playoff hunt. So now the difference, of course, is when OU took on Alabama last year, they already knew that a third tier bowl was the best they could do, right? Because it was a rough year for the Sooners last year. By contrast, Alabama comes into this game with everything goal-wise still right in front of them. It's a tenuous situation for OU. If they drop this one on the road at Bryant-Denny Stadium, then it's going to be, keychains for bowl prizes for the Sooners.
Yeah, I think so. And then you start to wonder about Brent Venables all over again, because this would be a third loss. And let's say they drop a game to like Missouri, and now they're 8-4
right
at the end of November. You know, how does that resonate with that fan base that was not happy? It's improvement certainly over a year ago, but Oklahoma, kind of like Alabama, doesn't measure improvement based on 6-6 the previous year or whatever. 7-6, 6-7. So huge for both teams. I don't know about you. For Alabama, I feel better about this matchup than I did LSU. That may sound crazy because Alabama was a double digit favorite last week, but I didn't like that number. Alabama ultimately covered it, I guess. But I just felt like LSU offensively had more difference makers, at the skill positions and, even at quarterback, although Nussmeier, we know, was benched in that game now against Alabama. I don't know about you. What's your sort of, just before we get nuts and boltsy, what's your general vibe right now where this matchup is concerned?
Different than yours. I to me, Oklahoma presents bigger problems for Alabama than LSU did. And I guess there's a little bit of Monday morning quarterback in there because Alabama's already knocked off LSU. But even before the LSU game, I saw this as a bigger challenge. OU comes in, number one defense in the league, giving up 14 points a game, only giving up 264 yards a game. That's also first in the league. They've also got Georgia level special teams, big time special teams for Oklahoma.
Great kicker. We know that
he's 18 out of 19 on field goals. So he's basically money. By the way, he's 6 out of 6 from 50 plus.
Yep.
So Tate Sandell is going to give you 3 whenever you get him in range. You got to assume that punting wise, they got the number one punting average in the league, averaging like 47 yards a punt. So, from a special team standpoint, you've got to give Oklahoma the edge, unquestionably. And as good as Alabama's defense has played, and I think Alabama's defense has steadily improved, played certainly one of its best games against LSU, didn't give up a touchdown. But this OU defense has been crazy good. And
they get after the quarterback. I don't know. We get player availability reports. Was it tonight we got the first one?
First one tonight. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I need to see what a couple of guys for OU look like in that regard, starting with R. Mason Thomas, who leads the Sooners with 6.5 sacks. He had the scoop and score a couple of Saturdays ago against Tennessee. That's what I'm interested in for OU is a couple of guys. And look, they're still across that front seven, especially really good. I'll say this though, the offense for Oklahoma, I think if you can do a good enough job on Mateer, as far as his legs, my biggest concern for the Alabama defense this week isn't Mateer throwing the football. Satania is a really good wide receiver. Other than that though, it's not the sort of assortment array of weaponry that say LSU runs out there. Right. So I think if Alabama does a good enough job against Mateer in the quarterback run game, you look at this Oklahoma offense, 258 total yards in that loss to Texas, lost 23-6. Now Mateer was coming back off of the injury, so that was his first game back. But then the next week, it looks good because they beat South Carolina 26-7, 319 yards of offense.
Yeah.
I think Alabama's defense can be, and they've been hearing about this Oklahoma defense all week, the Alabama defense. So for the first time in Kane Womack's 20 plus games as a coordinator at Alabama, I go into a game really feeling pretty confident about that side of the ball against Oklahoma's offense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's been a phenomenal run for this OU defense. And like you pointed out, that pass rush is really big for Brent Venables' team. I think that pass rush covers for a secondary that might be a little bit more average than people realize. I think if Alabama is able to pass protect the way they did in Athens, the way they did I think they pass protected pretty well against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. If they can protect Ty Simpson as well as they did in those games, then maybe Ty Simpson's able to rip this secondary up, because I don't think it's a great secondary, but they do get after the quarterback. You mentioned R. Mason Thomas and his health status being key. I think OU needs that pass rush to defend the pass.
I think what you said about Georgia is, I talked about this a little while ago on Second Helping with Brent Beard. I think offensively for Ryan Grubb, that needs to be a lot of the game plan, because these Oklahoma linebackers love to get downhill and play in front of them. They like to play that way as a defense in general. They like to be the people doing the striking. And I thought Grubb did a masterful job against Georgia in a couple different areas, one of them being consistently getting C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson outflanked to the perimeter, whether it was the backs throwing it to him, whether it was the quick game, whether it was Josh Cuevas. I think that has to be a big part of what they did. Alabama's not going to run the football especially well Saturday afternoon. They're not. But they can cover for some of that and perhaps even get some explosive plays out of those type of approaches. Pin and pull, line up in some condensed formations, but then pin and pull, get to the perimeter that way. RPO, things like that kind of keep these backers especially honest for OU. Because if you just give them one pitch, you give this Oklahoma defense one pitch, they're going to hit a lot of home runs against you.
24 points win this game, you think?
I think so. Yeah. I talked with Brent about that too. I said that I thought first to 23, 24 might win the game. Yeah. I think it can be that kind of game. It can be kind of like a Missouri. You need to prepare yourself. Oklahoma's probably going to out-hit Alabama in this game. And I know that hurts. That strikes to the soul of the Alabama fan base. But kind of like how Missouri lowered the boom a few times against this Alabama offense, I think you might get some of that. But look, if you're able to use the Sooners' aggression against them to get what you need ultimately done, and Alabama at this point, I know Grubb, I know Kalen, they're saying all these right things about the run game. We got to work on it, got to get better. I hope inside that building, that's not the mindset. I hope it's, look, this is who we are. This is the way we can attack Oklahoma, and don't fall victim to the, well, we got to run the ball and we got to run it better. No, 10 games in against this defense, that's not going to happen. And take care of the ball, because Oklahoma in terms of turnover margin, not great. Not great. And that's an area where Alabama has been pretty good.
I think we're going to see a lot of screen passes from Alabama in this game, and the Grubb screen package is diverse, right? Mm-hmm. It's he'll throw the tunnel screen at you, he'll throw the middle screen at you, he'll throw the smoke screen at you. every kind of screen there is, he's got it in the playbook. Mm-hmm. And if he runs 8 to 10 screen passes in this game, it's not going to be the same kind of screen every time, Travis. And I think that's one of the things that can help Alabama overcome a weak running game.
Yeah, you got to change the looks. I know it can be gimmicky at times, what we've seen from Alabama, but I still think you got to stick with some of that. You got to change the eye level for this Oklahoma defense pre-snap, post-snap. And I also think you talked about this a little bit earlier. OU on the back end of me, what I've seen and what the numbers tell me, just okay, not great. Got an outstanding true freshman corner who's going to be an absolute superstar. But I don't think it just has to be spread them out, quick game them. I think there's going to be times you go 7-8 man protection and see if we can get these guys blocked and then 3-man routes. Mm-hmm. You know, with those three receivers that you can put on the field together.
Yeah.
And then I try to hit my intermediate to deeper stuff off of that. See if they can cover it. Yeah. I think it's got to be a mix of that. You know, I just don't think you can count on just one aspect of that offense and think you're going to get it done.
The Ryan Grubb comments this week. We love talking about Ryan Grubb's Monday comments. He's usually pretty darn insightful, Travis. Couple things of note from his remarks on Monday for me anyway. One, he brought up Kendall Daniel, the outstanding Oklahoma linebacker, 6'5", 245. He said this is Brent Venables' new Isaiah Simmons, who was a really good linebacker for those Clemson teams that were outstanding. Moved him around, right? Versatile guy. So how Alabama deals with that guy is certainly interesting. And also, you know, Grubb was asked about Lane Kiffin's comments from a few weeks back when he said that he thought Oklahoma was outstanding with the sign stealing. And Grubb said, oh, yeah, they are real good at that. And if we're going to let Brent know we're changing all of them. What about that?
Oh, I go back to that. I guess it was a 2019 championship game in Santa Clara. I mean, you know, they jumped a hitch from Tua. Like, they knew not only what was coming, they knew what play on the script it was. Yeah. Like, it was play 4. Yeah. You know, they jumped that hitch for, you know, a pick 6 that was huge in that game to get Clemson off and running. Clemson won the game easily, ultimately. But, yeah, it kind of took me back to that. Maybe they had some of the signs in that one. You know, a lot of people say, well, you got in-helmet communication now, which you do. But at 15, that cuts off. Mm-hmm. So you're still seeing Ty and other quarterbacks once it hits 15 looking over to get signals,
right? You
know, after the mic goes off to make that late check that a lot of times runs right up against 0 on the play clock. So there are still signs to be stolen in college football, even with the in-helmet communication. There's also personnel groupings that get signaled in too, you know, that can help you get a jump. Especially if you're going against tempo, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt. A couple things to watch in that game as well. We've talked a good bit about this Oklahoma defense. How about the Alabama defense against the OU offense, Travis? It's been a better Oklahoma offense this year than last year for sure. It was a disaster of an offensive line in Norman last year. This year they've got that offensive line performing not great, but better. Running game really hadn't been there. Pass protection certainly been improved. Mateer's been a little bit up and down. I think this Alabama defense, the way it's playing right now, can bottle this OU offense pretty good.
That's my thinking on the matchup, is that it will be hard for Alabama offensively, but it may not require 20. If they do what they're capable of doing defensively, you know, and again, I go back to Mateer in the ground game, but they've still given up the spits of long runs here and there. Still, we saw it last week with Harlan Berry for LSU, and Xavier Robinson is that guy for Oklahoma. Last couple of games, he's been over 100 yards, and that yards per carry has been, you know, somewhere around 9. For him. Yeah. 25 carries in his last two games for 224 yards. So, you know, that tells you where he's been able to get it done, which is interesting because I think he's 230 pound back, mm-hmm. you know, and he hurt Alabama last year, 18 for 107 in Norman. So it's not like Alabama doesn't know what's coming with Xavier Robinson.
No, they don't. You're right. He's a big back. He can do a lot of damage. And, you know, Alabama's defense seems to me to be peaking pretty well right now. Yonze Pierre seems to be definitely coming around as a pass rusher, right? Had a huge game against Tennessee, another big game against LSU with a couple of sacks there. So, and Quay Russo, speaking of health issues and injury reports, Travis, sounds like he's going to be questionable at the outset of these injury reports. Maybe his status changes later in the week and we know a little bit more. Always a big question, as we always talk about, whether or not they're able to practice full go on Wednesday. As of right now, I don't know what Russo's practice status was on Wednesday. However, Kalen DeBoer asked about it on Wednesday and made it sound like Russo perhaps could be a go against the Sooners.
Yeah, he's officially listed as questionable on the initial player availability report tonight is Quay Russo. And it'd be great to have him, as we talked about, pair him up in some situations with Yonze Pierre. I see Caden Jones is questionable as a linebacker, more of a special teamer for Alabama. Deshaun Jones is on the report. The Husky defensive
back.
That's
a new one. Yeah.
He's probable, which would lead you to believe, at least at this point in the week, there's a good chance he'll be available, but maybe it's a way in which we see even more of Red Morgan in this game Saturday afternoon.
What Jones and Morgan against LSU were pretty evenly split when it comes to action at that Husky spot. And that's not a small matter against OU, because Isaiah Satania, who you mentioned earlier, he plays in the slot almost exclusively. Very few snaps for him on the outside. He leads OU in receptions. I think he's got 49 catches on the year. And his average per catch, Travis, is 14.1 yards, which is high for a slot guy, right? Yep. You usually see those slot guys catching balls on third and four, and they're just the guy that gets open quick, gets tackled quick, and, you know, a lot of times those slot guys, their average per catch is under 10. 14 yards a catch for a slot guy tells me that he can do some damage with the ball in his hand after the catch.
Yeah, and he's a return type, so that fits. You know, a guy that can return punts typically is a guy you would like to get in space, like a Lottie Brooks, you know, is that kind of guy for Alabama. Ryan Williams, Alabama's tried to do that some with this season. I guess, too, as we talk about the availability report, no Ryan Williams on this initial report, unlike a week ago. So, absolutely, I think you know, Red Morgan in recent weeks, as much as anything for me, I think it was maybe Tennessee. He showed me he'd set an edge in kind of the quick game and out on the perimeter. And he was tackling people, which was a big plus, I thought. So if he's going to do those things, more Red Morgan might not be a bad thing.
No, it might not. And he's one of several players on this Alabama defense who have steadily improved. I thought Morgan had a really rough game, albeit in limited snaps, against Florida State in the opener.
Who did? Yeah,
a lot of them did. He's steadily gotten better, even though so he hadn't played a ton of snaps, but he's certainly playing a little bit more lately. Also a guy who I think has improved quite a bit, Travis, and really over the last month has made quite a few plays, is Nakai Hill-Green at inside linebacker. Mm-hmm.
Those guys at those inside linebacker spots, that I got to think that's sort of come together as well as Kane Womack could have hoped. I mean, when you brought Nakai Hill-Green in from Colorado via the transfer portal, I'm sure part of that, a good bit of that going into the season, was where was Deontay Lawson going to be coming off of his injury, which probably don't want to say this too much, Oklahoma a year ago for Deontay. Yeah. So I'm sure this one carries a little extra meaning for him. But those three have been they've complemented each other well. There's no doubt about it. And I've said this since, I guess, Sunday night when we talked a little about Oklahoma. Quarterback runs this week for John Mateer. There must be consequences when they run the quarterback. When Oklahoma runs the quarterback, these linebackers, somebody, Bray Hubbard, somebody, that there has to be consequences when they do that. And so, you know, we'll see. It was, I guess it was Jefferson against Tennessee who got the shot on Aguilar down around the goal line. Legal, of course, clean, not advocating for dirty play here, Chase.
Right.
But you've got to make Mateer aware early in the game. And he's a tough dude for a quarterback. I don't even know how much that'll bother him, but you got to put the thought in his head early that, you know, it's not just going to be a lot of space to traverse if that's the path you're going to take.
Yeah. And bear in mind, and I'm sure Kane Womack has spun this reel for the defense quite a bit. Jackson Arnold really hurt Alabama as a runner last year. Right. And of course he's moved on to Auburn now. Mm-hmm. But if John Mateer is a guy who Womack feels like is a major threat in that zone read game as a keeper, well, flip on that tape from last year. You know, Jackson Arnold ran, especially in the second half. Arnold really hurt UA last year.
Just shrunk the game. I mean, just took the game, took the clock. And that was almost just a single wing game plan for Oklahoma. You play behind that defense, and I don't think that's going to happen. New coordinator, he's not – Arbuckle isn't going to go with something like that. He's going to run his stuff. And a big part of that stuff, though, does involve John Mateer with his legs. And especially later in games when it's tight and it's put away time or winning time, that's when you really will probably see Mateer the most with his legs.
Going to be a lot of fun. All right, the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Going to be moving on here. Want to ask our listeners and viewers to contribute to Parker Covers Alabama, a 501c3 nonprofit at parkercoversalabama.com. It supports wheelchaired Alabama residents. It was launched in the name of Mike Parker, a friend of mine and Travis's, who spent 20 years in a wheelchair. We lost Mike, unfortunately, earlier this week, and we got Parker Covers Alabama started again, parkercoversalabama.com. If you'd like to make a donation to support wheelchaired Alabama residents, definitely would appreciate it. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on to close things out, as always, Travis, to bounce around the SEC and the action in the league this week. Got to start with Texas and Georgia, right? That's the other big headliner game. Georgia comes in ranked 5th at 8-1. Texas comes in ranked 10th at 7-2. That'll be a 6:30 p.m. ABC kickoff. And so for folks who want to see Alabama OU and Texas Georgia back-to-back, they're locked in on ABC for 8 hours there, right?
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating because you got the retro sort of titans of the league, at least of late, in Alabama and Georgia, and you got them taking on the new guys on the same Saturday. I mean, I love it. That's awesome. You know, Texas has the feel of a team that maybe has gotten right now. It took a little while, but at the right time, they're playing the best that they've played all season. Now, you know, they've done a lot of it offensively with the quick game and created explosive plays against Vanderbilt, against not Mississippi State last week, but they've done that here in the last few weeks where they've used that quick game out to the perimeter to really hurt defenses like Vanderbilt. I don't think they're going to be able to do that as much against Georgia, although Georgia on the back end, this isn't vintage Georgia secondary play under Kirby Smart, especially. So Georgia's run game really kicked in against Mississippi State last week. Texas typically going to be pretty tough in that regard. So Arch Manning, Gunnar Stockton, a couple quarterbacks playing good football right now, confident football. I like Georgia at home, but I think it has a chance to be kind of like Alabama, Oklahoma, you know, not a game in the 30s maybe, but very competitive throughout.
A little bit more on the line for Texas than Georgia in this one, right? Because if Georgia beats Texas, Texas is not going to go to Atlanta, and they're not going to go to the CFP. I think
it's like Oklahoma at
this point, right? On the flip side, if Texas knocks off Georgia, that's going to knock Georgia out of Atlanta, but it's not going to knock Georgia out of the CFP.
It won't, but Georgia will still have Georgia Tech in right? Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. So not a gimme this year.
It's not.
Not a gimme this year. It should be a lot of fun. Again, that Texas-Georgia game getting started 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Coming right off of that Alabama-Oklahoma game should be fun as well. Elsewhere in the SEC, Travis, Missouri will host Mississippi State. Ole Miss will host Florida. Tennessee is playing a non-conference game against New Mexico State. As is Kentucky hosting Tennessee Tech, got Texas A&M hosting South Carolina, and finally LSU hosting Arkansas. What about Missouri hosting Mississippi State, Travis? Missouri down to that third string quarterback who was just a disaster last week.
Yeah.
The Tigers could not move the ball whatsoever. I think Mississippi State might be primed to win this game. I know Missouri is at home, but if Missouri continues to be just utterly unable to throw the football, and that spread is 7.5, give me the Bulldogs and 7.5.
You like that hook, that rusty hook?
I think so, yeah.
That half. The thing for Mississippi State is they gave it up on the ground to Georgia last week. 300 plus yards for Georgia. Now,
yeah.
Georgia's offensive line, I'll say this too in relation to that Texas game. We talk about Texas getting right. I think Georgia's getting right. And not just in terms of Gunnar Stockton, but that offensive line has had some injuries. It looks like they're getting guys back and going to be where they need to be for this stretch. So Missouri can run the football with Ahmad Hardy and Jamal Roberts. So that's probably where I would still lean to Missouri. To be able to control that game. And one thing Drink does at Missouri is he wins games like these. If Missouri's supposed to win, they typically do win. Now, if Missouri's not supposed to win, they typically do not win. That's the other side of that with Drink. But, yeah, we'll see. I'm with you. The hook could make a lot of difference on that line, though.
Arkansas at LSU, I think an interesting one for us to touch on really quickly as well. Bobby Petrino is still waiting for that first dub. And you and I talked about maybe the best Arkansas can do for a permanent head coach is to just stick with Bobby. Doesn't he have to hang a dub on the board at some point?
Yeah, I know like he does. I don't give a damn. Give me Bobby Petrino with no wins over. There's guys out there that I think that fan base would in their minds rather. I'd still take Petrino over because I mean, at the end of the day, what's really going to be available isn't going to be, I think, just a slam dunk upgrade over Bobby, but it's hard to give him another, crack at it on a permanent basis. If he goes through this elongated interim stretch with a warm bagel in that loss column.
LSU hosting that game, of course, with an interim coach on their own now, Frank Wilson. So call that one the interim bowl, I suppose. And Ole Miss hosting Florida would definitely clear up the SEC championship game picture a lot if Florida was able to pull off an upset in Oxford. But I just do not see that happen, especially after what Florida did against Kentucky last week, just getting blown off the field. They're not beating Ole Miss in Oxford.
Yeah, you know how like in pro sports they say teams are getting ready for Cancun, you know, when the season's gonna players are getting ready for those tropical destinations.
Yeah.
As soon as the season's over. I think that's Florida roster thinking about other places that they're gonna land in potentially, including DJ Lagway. I mean, where are some of these quarterbacks gonna be next year? We talk so much about these head coaches. Where's Lenore Sellers going to be next year? Where's DJ Lagway going to be next year? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's its own deal altogether.
Is Michael Van Buren going to hang around LSU?
Is the new coach want to, you know, is it going to be his pick? is Michael Van Buren the guy he wants?
I was hand in hand
in a lot of ways.
I was talking to somebody the other day, a mutual friend of ours, Lynn Moore.
Ran into Lynn
in the grocery store. We were saying, look, when the coaching carousel goes crazy like it has this year, the portal situation goes crazy with it.
Haywire.
Because all these kids, as soon as somebody gets hired or fired, they're going to have this win. It might be a smaller window, but they're going to have a window to go. And it's going to create a mark, especially when there's big jobs that opens up that have opened up, which is the case this year.
Yeah.
So this transfer market this winter, Travis, is going to be wild.
It's going to be wild. And as wild as it might be, still give me Bobby Petrino over James Franklin. I don't care. If I'm Arkansas, I don't care. If James Franklin told me tonight, hey, I'm ready to sign on. Anyway, it is. It's gonna be. We keep thinking we've reached the tipping point of unprecedented, right? And I don't think we have.
What about? And this is definitely. We'll close things out with something Alabama fans probably don't want to hear, but somebody's going to offer Ryan Grubb a head coaching job at the end of this year, don't you think? And where
they should
that be? Yeah,
they should. I've said this on the channel before. These fan bases, and I'm talking about P4 fan bases, are all fixated on these ideal candidates. Well, there's not enough of them, so you better set your sights or adjust your sights to being open to high level coordinators. So absolutely, Ryan Grubb, he may not be on a lot of the On Three or Rivals or those hot boards, but I bet there's some ADs that got Ryan Grubb in their back pocket. Not saying he's going to get one of those jobs, but probably getting a little more of interest than the general public maybe is led to believe. It's not a big deal. Isn't it funny? In the NFL, coordinators go to the head coach level almost in every job that comes open. Almost every job in the NFL. The offensive coordinator role just steps right in.
Yeah.
I mean, just every cycle in the NFL. But boy, if a coordinator goes to a P4 head coaching job, fan bases lose it.
Yeah.
You know? They all want the proven winner.
Yeah.
Well, if there were that many proven winners out there, we wouldn't have this many unproven losers.
You're right. You're
There's
right.
Not enough.
And if Ryan Grubb doesn't get an offer from a $10 million a year job, he'll get an offer from a $6 million a year kind of job.
It's gonna be one or the other.
We
haven't even talked about the domino effect yet. And there's gonna be dominoes that we're not even thinking of right now.
Yeah.
There's gonna be at least one situation, I think, like Brian Kelly when he left Notre Dame to go to LSU.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's gonna be at least one of those.
Now,
I think for me, I wouldn't be as interested in making that kind of move because it isn't 10 years ago. 10 years ago, if I was going to make that kind of move, I'd have a good idea what my roster was, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can tell me your collective, your NIL, whatever is going to be better at this other place, but I still got to put together a whole brand new damn roster.
Yeah.
If I make a sort of lateral jump, at least where I'm at, as hard as it is to sustain a roster these days, I got a feel for 30 guys or so, 40 guys.
Sure.
And I understand if I go to LSU, I should be able to attract elite guys or good guys. I understand that, but there's still a lot of uncertainty, man, if you make those jumps for sure. But I still think there'll be at least one that does it.
Yep. Going to be fun. Going to be a crazy winter, crazy December. Looking forward to it for sure. I want to thank our listeners and viewers for joining us here on the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to join us when we reconvene on Sunday night to recap that Alabama home game against OU. Until then, for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodred, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We'll talk to you next time right here on Talkin' Tide.